If Only He Could Shoot brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. As you can tell, it's me, Frosty, and I'm joined by Cam.
Evening. Hello.
And Dave.
Hello, hello.
Good to see you, boys.
It's good to be sterling, here.
Yeah. Bit of a sterling effort, us getting back together again over the medium of the internet.
I mean, we're setting a really low bar for ourselves if this is a sterling effort.
But to be honest, it's a recording, and that's more than we've done. Of late.
Yeah.
So we'll try and work up to actually getting back to live recordings and pretending we're human beings and not just AI bots. We might as well crack on straight into the football. First up, the Knicks men's team. Now that we have a women's team starting up this week, we'll have to differentiate. But the Knicks men's team played the Mariners. And boys, that was... Not quite as quality as it could have been.
That's really interestingly worded. Look, I'll be straight up honest. I didn't see the game live because I was working at the time, and I have seen bits and pieces since then, but I haven't seen the whole game in full. What I did see, there was a few. Shall we just say early season jitters, I think is the most appropriate way to describe that. A bit of, you know, lack of composure, a bit of lack of understanding quite the systems that is going on, a bit of ring rust, I think is how I would describe it. Rather than anything more sinister or maybe terminal within the squad, it's just, you know, they need to get more minutes under their belt, basically.
We should probably talk about the squad. The same squad as the first game, bar Soteria and Wayne swapped. This was a tactical swap, according to Uffy, for a specific reason. It all kind of was a bit slow at the beginning, Dave.
I mean, it was. I think in some ways, this is kind of what I expected it to be. Because, I mean, we talked about predictions last week, and you guys thought it was going to be kind of 1-0 maybe, that we didn't really have the scoring side of things down. But we certainly created chances, and we did score a few. So it wasn't pretty football, but we were playing that kind of early season jitters football I expected, particularly having seen Mariners the previous week. They were showing similar signs last week, and I think we saw it from them again. They weren't particularly well-structured or well-drilled themselves, and, you know, it wasn't a pretty game of football by any stretch.
I have to agree. I think we certainly created the better opportunities. Whilst we certainly didn't have the most ball and certainly didn't have the most territory. What we did with it certainly felt a lot more dangerous. There was, you know, a hoop of shot, and actually, to be fair, the thing I took away from the first half is I've said this quite a lot. I really wish Soterio could finish. And I think that makes a hell of a difference, because I think there was one part there where he's done this phenomenal turn of his defender to get through on goal. And it's a brilliant piece of football. And then just side-footed past the six-yard box on the other side of the goal. And it's that kind of final aspect to his game that if he could just do it, he'd be a good footballer. He really would. And I think that's my massive takeaway. We created great opportunities, but because Soterio just doesn't have that finish when he has to think about it, it ended up being a nil all at half time.
I mean, unluckily for him, I don't even think it's only when he thinks about it, because he had another great chance in the first half. It was straight to him off a corner. Really, really nice little volley he hit. Skied it over the bar, you know, like it was a good volley. But the thing is, he's good enough that he gets himself in good positions in a range of different plays. He's not just a, you know, flat track bully with pace. That's not the only thing he's got here. He actually does some nice turns and he gets in good positions, makes good runs, is in the right spot on free kicks. Like, he does a lot of stuff right. And as you say, he just can't finish any of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, if he could, he'd be excellent, particularly for the A-League.
Yeah, exactly. I would love to see someone like Greeny just take him for an hour a day after training's finished and practice just putting it on the spot every single time, because that's what he needs. He just needs that where it's just so automatic. He's basically an automaton. He doesn't think about it. It just happens, and it happens every time, and it's just practiced and practiced and practiced so well. He needs that, and he could be such an asset.
I think, bearing out your point, I was just having a look at the numbers because I was something you said, Cam, about we didn't have the most possession or the chances, and I was kind of thinking did they have any, and it turns out that their shots and on target was basically the same as ours.
But there's shots on target, there's shots on target, right?
It's that quality. The difference being the XG. The difference was 0.89 for Mariners and 2.29 for the Knicks. So Dave's point is that we should score quite a few on them. You know, a 3-1 sort of 3-2 territory. Bears out. There are quality chances, but we're just the finishing. And unfortunately, it's only Hoops that seems to be putting them away regularly. And he did again today.
I was going to say that's very it mirrors very much the MacArthur game early on. That was what is an 0.82 and a 2.6 or something like that XG as well. And this is basically mirrored in this game. So, which doesn't play out what I was expecting, I'll be honest. But yeah, from the season as a whole, and certainly not this early in the season, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know as well how many of those shots for them came once they were chasing the game, because it did feel there like after we missed the penalty, which I assume we'll talk about later, they really did have a good period of pressure and they had some chances. It really felt like they might score and get back into this. I don't remember specifically if there were good chances in that period, but in terms of how I felt about that, it felt like they were creating some stuff and getting a few shots in during that kind of last minute dash to the line. It'd be interesting to see how much that might have helped pad their stats a little, where we were just scrambling to defend.
It's kind of an oofy thing to kind of once we're ahead. I mean, even the subs started getting a bit that way, but I'm probably getting ahead, to be honest. We should probably talk about Hooper's goal. So that crucial period straight after the second half begins, he's popped up with another one.
Yeah, it was a shit goal. Tidy finish, though.
Yeah, lovely finish. Yeah, it was
like horrendous everything else, but really, really nice finish. Like it's been put in. A defender's headed it into the foot/body of an attacker who's running, and the ball's just kind of ping-ponged around there, and Hoops turns it in nicely. He's Johnny on the spot, and he doesn't just get something on it. He really finesses this over the goalkeeper and into the net. It's very tidy. It's one you expect a poacher to get, but when you watch the slow-mo, he's really done this very nicely. He could have probably just lashed at it, still scored, but he made really sure of it. It's that quality that he brings that I think, you know, if this had landed at Soterio's feet, it would have been, you know, a crapshoot as to where it was going, whereas Hoops knew exactly what he was doing with this, and yeah, tidy finish.
I think you've nailed that there, Dave, with the quality he brings. It sums it up perfectly, because it could have gone anywhere. Like the whole play was so scrappy and ugly and unstructured, but the fact that it fell to the right guy who knew exactly what he was doing and placed it exactly where he needed to score the goal.
And he didn't have any time to think about it. For him, that was just instinctive to finesse it the way he did. Like, anyone else would have gone, just get something on it, you know? Whereas he was like, yeah, no, I know what to do with this. He's played at that level and just knows instinctively what to do.
Yeah,
that you called him a poacher, and I was thinking exactly the same word. It's just he is, if he gets that, it's kind of 95% of the time that's in the back of the net.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the keeper's doing. I think it's just bang on there. Unfortunately, we have tried to consolidate a little bit not long after that by keeping possession. Josh Law is going back the ball behind him, and he's looking to play it to Ollie Sale with his off peg, his right boot, and he has sliced the shit out of it. I think that's about the only thing I can say. And he's so far under hit it, even Sale couldn't just do anything about it. Arena was on the spot. He chased up really well. You've got to give him credit for that, because he looks like he's got very tight hamstrings when he runs, but he's chased up and rounded Sale without any problems at all. Yeah, that was not good, lads.
No.
No. I don't think there's another way you could describe that. It was pretty amateurish, to be honest. And it's not the sort of thing we've seen from Laws. So the head and the hands and shame at the top of the box after the ball gets slotted home, I think, sums that up perfectly.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, this isn't on anyone other than Laws. Just makes a mistake. It's that simple. It should be an easy pass back to the keeper, and he just shanks it, and no one can do anything to save him from there. As you say, he's just got to suffer that moment alone at the top of the box on his knees. But I mean, I'm sure he'll learn from it. The given he's been relatively unknown prior to coming with us, he still looks good. I wouldn't, you know, we're all going to have mistakes in football, and this was a bad one, but didn't cost us 3 points. It is what it is. You move on, you learn from it.
Yeah. For me, the telling thing was that you didn't see the rest of the team just absolutely lay into him. You'd think Ollie Sale would have full rights to just go with both barrels. Maybe not the point of throwing yourself on the ground and pretending he's hit you, if you've seen that video.
That was glorious.
Oh, that is just... Yep. We might actually talk about that a bit later, because that was just beyond words. They've all just kind of give him a pat on the back and just like, yeah, okay, that happens. It's fine. As you say, though, it didn't cost us three, because fortunately, man on the spot, Josh Soterio, who actually made a team of the week, I should add, he's picked up the ball.
He got the three Tobin points as well, I believe.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure I was watching that game.
Do you know what? Honestly, mate, as I said, if he could finish, he'd be phenomenal, because the work that he was doing outside of the finishing was excellent. The turns, the moving into space, the making himself available, all the things you want your striker to do, the running off Hooper, you know, there's a lot of good work that he did there. I can understand it. He gets in there because he scored a goal to cap the other work he's doing.
Yeah.
But he could have had four.
Yeah, absolutely. Like this could have been an easy hat trick for him. And if we're looking at the quality of the goal he scored in isolation, it's not a 3-point goal. It just isn't. But his performance across the match was really good. He got in good positions. He created good chances. He did a lot of work there that, as you say, could have been four goals. And it was what kept us pretty positive, particularly in that first half when there weren't any goals. You know, he was probably the one doing the most of the work there in terms of intent to score. So...
The goal he did score, Jesus.
Are we sure he was trying to score that? I thought that was across the back post.
No, I think he was shooting. He hasn't shot well. He's just happened to find the perfect gap and a keeper that thinks it's going wide and a defender that appears to get his stud stuck in the ground. And
I think the defender actually gets a touch.
Do you?
I think there's a small deflection here. It's a terrible shot either way. But okay, I think it clips the heel of the defender, which is what takes a lot of the kind of pace out of it too.
I'm just going to jump on YouTube and have a look at this, because it's on the...
It had no pace on it anyway. It was a side foot. It looked like he scuffed it, but he didn't hit ground or anything. So I'm not... That's what made me think that he was just hitting it at that back post.
I think he actually hits it half decently straight into the other guy's heel, and that's what makes it look like a scuff. But I'd have to go back and watch the replay again, but that was my reaction when I was watching replays the other day. Was I thought that this was straight off that heel, and that's what makes it look like the scuff.
Okay, I've got it here. I'm just going to watch it now. Yeah, it's definitely come off the heel of the defender in front of him.
Oh, right. Okay.
So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, 100%.
From my memory, he's hit it straight at the keeper. Is that fair?
Yeah, it doesn't travel far enough between him and the defender, to be sure.
Yeah, but right. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, the deflection off the heel of the defender in front of him kind of gives it a bit of a swerve, so it comes in off the post. But let's be honest, the defender in the middle of the box should have got a cross on that as well. Yeah.
But I think without this deflection, it's another miss for Soterio. That's yeah. He happens to cop a deflection and it's in. But you take those, you know. Maybe it'll give him some confidence.
Who knows? So. He celebrated hard, which was good.
Yeah. Yeah, he sure has enough chances that he deserves to celebrate one when he goes.
Yeah, he does, mate. That's for sure.
Yeah, I thought the celebration wasn't quite in context of what he had just done. That's for sure. Because he got a bit lucky there. I think it's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys were thinking he'd kick the ground and scuffed it. I'm giving him a bit more credit.
From looking at the way he swung, it didn't look like he'd scuffed it, but the way it came off the boot, so it just did not go well, unfortunately. Early bench time for Gary Hooper's obviously working back into fitness, and Ben Wayne has come on. And Pennington got a bit more time as well. Both of them came on the 64th minute. What did you think of Pennington?
I honestly don't have much to say. I didn't see much of him. I mean, he had some minutes. I didn't see him on the ball a lot. I mean, I wasn't particularly watching for it. But yeah, I definitely didn't walk away going, shit, he looks good or anything. I don't think I saw enough of him on the ball.
What I did see of him, he kind of looked that understated quality. You know, you didn't notice him because it wasn't these flourishy touches. It's kind of not Steinman-esque, but that he wasn't playing the same position, but just did the simple things well. And I quite rate that.
It's exactly what we need. But if I sat down and watched his minutes again, I'm sure I'd probably have a stronger opinion. But it definitely was one of those performances where I didn't notice it, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. No. If you have a shocker when you're getting some minutes off the bench like that, I probably would have noticed and thought, shit, this isn't the guy. So the fact he went unnoticed is probably good.
And he's probably just trying to work his way into it, right? Yeah. It's his first minute, second minutes. You know, he hasn't exactly got a lot under the belt.
No, I think he only got about 5 minutes the last time, if that.
Exactly. No. So he's just working his way towards trying to, you know, break into the first team and learning the systems and stuff. So I can understand why you'd want to do the simple things well and not be too worried about the flashy things to start with.
Interesting that he replaced Alex Rufer, though. 64th minute, it's a bit of an early exit for the skipper. Maybe he's being monitored, getting that keeping energy in his legs early doors so don't run him into the ground.
Yeah. It could be tactical. There could be loads of reasons why they decided to sub him. And at this stage of the season, you can hardly make too many speculative guesses about it, to be honest.
Yeah. And the other interesting sub I thought was Louis Fenton coming on for Callan Elliott.
Which is great. It's so glad to see Louis back. Yeah, it is. We all know his well-documented injury concerns, and you know, it's good. I hope he manages to stay fit and healthy now for a long period of time, because he's been a great servant to the club and he's had a lot of incredibly bad luck. So good to see him back out there. And, you know, we want people fighting for positions in the team. You don't want someone to be getting the position by default, and having him back means that there's, you know, competition in right defence, but you know, we all know he can play further forward if necessary as well. So yeah, he's quite a good utility that way. So good to see him back.
Yep. The other sub at the same time was Ben Old coming on and making a bit of an impact early on. Nice little pen to be taken.
Yep. I mean, dead set pen.
Yeah, that's what no one argued about it. Kind of like, oh yeah, damn it.
Yeah, he's definitely clipped the leg, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there was any argument, except over who was going to take it, which is interesting. Apparently, there is no designated penalty taker, according to Uffy. And Ben Wayne's gone and picked up the ball, and Reno's decided to argue the point with him. was interesting. I don't think I've quite seen this outside of either the Premier League or Cat 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm a little bit torn here because I wanted Reno to take it because he is a dead ball specialist, right? You saw by the
agreed
that he took just prior to Hooper's goal, which caused the corner. The guy knows how to hit a dead ball. I would prefer he took it if Hooper's not on the field. But as a striker, I want Wayne to have the confidence to step up and do exactly what he did. And as a striker, they should
exactly what he did.
Selfishness. No, perhaps I've not chosen my words as wisely as I would have hoped. To step up and take the penalty and have the confidence to back himself to score, basically. And no, he hasn't, obviously. But the fact that he was greedy enough and confident enough in his own ability to do it is a good sign. Unfortunately, missing or having it saved might dent that somewhat.
Yeah, and I think particularly with the kind of infighting around it as well will only fuel that more. Even if everyone had been 100% behind him taking it, missing it, I'm sure in his own head would have dented his confidence. But when you've got other guys saying, I told you shouldn't have taken it, you know, that kind of stuff, it'll only amplify. I think it's a shitty situation because, like you say, we know Ben Wayne is a confidence player, right? And I think banging in a penalty from the spot helped secure a 3-1 win, probably would have done him some good, might have helped get, you know, the monkey off the back and get some goals flowing. But instead, this has gone very much the other way, right? And if you look at it in the context of the game itself and just trying to get the 3-1, you're right. Someone like Reno is probably the smarter call to take it. So it's down to that thing of what do we want as fans, as, you know, the coach or whatever, in terms of, is this about the season or is it about 3 points in the game? And they're both good answers, right? So I can see why there wasn't, you know, why there was some contentious nature around this on the field amongst the players, because, you know, some guys are focused on, you know, let's just get these 3 points and move on. And I get that. But I also like that Ufi isn't dictating stuff like that. I think it shows that he's letting the kind of leadership group and letting the players kind of own some of that. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Obviously in this case, we didn't score the pen and that's certainly a bad thing. But I mean, yeah, anytime you're doing a run up like he did, you don't deserve to score. So,
I've got to say I agree. Reno, I think he would have been my pick, and I was very surprised when Wayno stepped over the top of it. I'd much prefer that you at least just have a pool of guys that are going to take them rather than nobody, which seems to be with what is basically there's Hooper and then there's just whoever feels like it. And I don't really like that. It just suggests to me that maybe that no one's practicing.
But if you're going to have a pool, Reno and Wayno are both going to be in that pool.
Yeah.
So this argument happens even if you don't have a designated, but you've got a group of guys, this argument happens anyway.
And I think the fact that Ufi's saying there isn't a designated taker doesn't mean there isn't a pool. I would hazard a guess that the boys at training, I mean, you've seen guys with a football, there's some people taking some penalty shots. I mean, they're in basically the eternal camp over there at the moment. I guarantee you within that squad, they know who the good penalty takers are and who aren't. And like Cam says, I think Wayno would be on the list. Whether he's the top of the list, I don't know, but I'd hazard a guess Reno's slightly above him, but Wayno's surely in that pool as well. Surely.
Well, he was. He's certainly not as high on the list as he thought he was anymore.
Yeah, for some reason, I think that Wayno's taken one before, like last season, didn't he?
Oh mate, you got a better memory than me if you can remember that.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I know he's certainly taken some for the reserves when he was playing there. You know, he's a reasonably regular fixture in that penalty taking spot there. But you know, it's a different level of keeper. Everything's different about it.
Speaking of different level, Football Ferns have had two games against South Korea in Korea and some somewhat less tropical times than right now. The first result was a loss, a 2-1 win. By the sounds of it, a pretty good run out, but a little unlucky to lose it. From what I, I didn't actually watch this game, but sounds like they were in it, maybe not necessarily dominant. And the view was that they were a little unlucky to lose. But the most recent fixture, a nice little snatch and grab at the end, apparently better then. I did see the goals. Some fantastic work by Libby Chance.
And the finish by Paige Satchel for her goal was spectacular. That was proper top draw finishing. It was great.
I thought the finishing was tidy on both, but for me it was all about Chance setting the ball away. A couple of long balls, but it looked like they were deliberately played for it, hung up for
it wasn't
for
a hoof.
Her and the wheels.
And it certainly wasn't. They've placed the ball over the defence for the run that Livy is making, and yet the touch over the fence again for Paige to run onto for that goal was spectacular. I can't remember what I think it might have been the second one, the one that she put top bins. It was just quality football, and it's so nice.
The first one.
It's so nice to see. I mean, we know there's great young talent coming through in the women's game, which obviously we're going to start talking about fairly shortly. And it's great to see them starting to deliver on an international stage, because you know these guys are going to be around, these ladies are going to be around for quite some time. They're good footballers. It only bodes well for New Zealand football moving forward.
Yeah. I thought there was a great effort. It's nice to see the new coach getting pretty excited about what had happened, and it looked like—I mean, I wouldn't call them set plays, but definitely they were put in the locker.
Yeah.
So that was a very good result against what is a very capable team in the women's game. So, and at away, that's I think that's probably their best. I think it snapped an 8-game losing streak or something.
They have been playing some pretty top of the line opposition as well.
Yeah.
It's not like that we play shit teams, because the games they're losing against like Canada and the USA, and then at the Olympics where they're playing Australia and was it Australia?
I thought it's France, isn't it?
USA and Sweden or something like that at the Olympics. So there's they're playing good teams. So this is a very, very good result.
Yeah. Well, we should probably get on to I was about to say the domestic women's game, but it's not domestic anymore, is it? It's the A-League women's competition, which for the first time is going to feature the Wellington Phoenix. And they're over there in camp at the moment, but we should probably give a bit more detail as to what's going on. Unfortunately, I don't know a tremendous amount about a lot of these players, just by virtue of some of them are in that younger age group, and others from the there's three from other A-League clubs previously last year. Lily Alfield from Perth, the goalkeeper, she's also been made captain. Seen her a little bit, very capable. Has a strong voice on her, I think, is a nice way, which I love to see in a keeper. Absolutely love that.
And a leader, mate. I think the key with her, when you've got a squad as young as the one that we do have, having a strong voice at the back to direct and lead is essential. So a very good choice, in my opinion.
Yeah. The other keeper, presumably the backup keeper, is Brianna Edwards. She's from University of Louisiana, Monroe. So she's been obviously in a pretty, I don't want to say professional environment because that'll get her in trouble, but in a very structured, very capable environment over in the US. So I have not seen her play, but I would expect her to be of a decent standard. Defenders are Mackenzie Barry from Northern Lights, Charlotte Lancaster, Palmy North Marist, Annabelle Martin, who has come via Sydney University but has played previously for, I believe, the Victory. If she's the same, Annabelle Martin. Yes, Victory. What a memory. Zoe McKean has come from Canterbury Pride, as has Kate Taylor. And Saskia Vosper has come from Northern Lights. Midfield, we have the third former Aussie A-leaguer, Isabel Gomez from the Wanderers. Grace Jale has come from Wake Forest University in the States. Hannah Jones from Sydney University. Chloe Knox from Northern Lights. Tereramoana Walker from the Jets. And Alyssa Winham from the Pride as well. Forwards, Kelly Brown from Waikato Barrow Plenty. Wide blockers, we love to call it. Jordan Jasnos from the New South Wales Football Institute. Ava Pritchard, Northern Lights. Kushla Rue, I think it is, from New South Wales, Football New South Wales. And Grace Wisniewski from YBOP as well. And the coaches are Sima Lewis and also Natalie
Lawrence.
Sorry, I just knew it was Natalie. Very interesting squad, I think. Gemma Lewis catches the eye, former Welsh international, and only 31, and already kind of well on her way to, well, she already is a professional coach. This is a big call. She's been the head of the domestic program.
She was head of the under-20s women's team.
Yeah.
And also assistant for the under-17s as well. So she's been in our system, I guess, for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than 4 years. Here it is, manager of the Football Ferns domestic program.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's she's obviously been around the tracks for a good few years now, knowing local players, especially in those age groups, which I think is really key for the squad because a lot of them are very, very young, only three with pro experience, and I'm using my air quotes that no one can see. And the Natalie Lawrence, the assistant, you're familiar with her, Dave, aren't you?
Yeah, she's a former Wellington United player, so I remember her playing with us back when she was still kicking the ball. She was development officer for Cat Football for quite a while before she headed overseas. I think it was to Canada, did some stuff with the Whitecaps. Yeah,
yep.
And then when she came back from a few years over there, she picked up the role as the Team Wellington youth coach. Did that for a couple of years, and then since then she's been involved with New Zealand football, particularly with the FFDP program, and she was assistant under Gemma Lewis for the under-20s as well. So obviously they know each other reasonably well and have been working together on both that domestic program and the under-20s for some time now. So they, I imagine, will work well together and certainly know what they were looking for in terms of building a squad. They had the connections, they had the players. A lot of these players are relatively unknown. Obviously, a few have played some W League before, but a lot of them, this is going to be quite a step up from the kind of leagues they have been playing. But it's a young squad with what looks like a decent amount of kind of domestic talent in it. So fingers crossed it goes well. But I also think with the nature of the way the announcement was, you know, they've been pulling this together pretty late in the piece. I'm sure they would have liked to have been able in a non-COVID world to draw on those American marquees and stuff we often have seen in that league before, but that's not the position any team's in this year. So I think they'll be pretty content if they can kind of sit mid-table and pull off some results, because this is clearly a long-term project. But I also think in there's going to be some tough ones as well. So yeah, fingers crossed it all goes more positive than negative.
Yeah, I see this season as a free hit. For these guys, for the women's team, and I will not judge them harshly, no matter how the season pans out. Purely because we are so excited to have the women's team and the pathway that it now creates and allows for the women to, you know, go pro is massive. When they have the stable base that they can have with having, you know, a Wellington. Home games and having everybody over here, and they've got more time to build a squad, looking at, you know, a wider talent pool. They've done very well. I think they've pulled together a very, very talented young squad. They've obviously had the pick of the National League from last season that shows, choosing the teams from Northern, the players from Northern and Canterbury shows the strength in the women's game in New Zealand as it is. Gemma and Natalie are both very good coaches. Natalie's been around Wellington football, particularly for quite some time, as Dave was saying, and she is very, very well known within football in New Zealand. And it can only bode well. So yeah, free hit this season. Go and give it your absolute best, and hopefully you can pull off some results and pull off some, you know, some decent football. And that'll be pretty much what I would consider a successful season. If you can play football with a good style and you do, you know, do well, fantastic.
Yeah, I think that you're dead right. It is a bit of free hit. The inexperience there is pretty rife, unfortunately, in the professional environment. There's going to be a lot on Annabelle. Her name's just gone. Annabelle Martin. She's one of the few that actually has a reasonable history in the W League formerly. 40 caps for the victory, and it sounds like basically it was her ACL that stopped her kind of there. She had big raps on her like 5 years ago or something. Won the victory medal, apparently, ahead of Hayley Rosso. So she's not bad. There's a couple of decent young players that I haven't seen Chloe Knott, but she has big raps on her. She's played in the championship at one stage. Or is it Durham? I don't want to say. I should probably look it up. But she's played at a reasonable standard. She's back playing in New Zealand. And there is Kelly Brown, who has banged in goals at age group stuff. I think she got like 20 in for the under 17s or something like that. Just huge, huge numbers. So it's kind of, there's going to be a lot of pressure on her to be putting goals in, but it's kind of interesting to see someone that's that prolific, whether they can make that step up. You guys have seen a fair bit of the under 17s, was it a couple of years ago?
Is the 2018 squad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Kelly Brown and Wisniewski, I think, were.
Wisniewski was, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. They're under quality attackers. Unfortunately, Mr. Borman and Mr. Rollo have not big reps on the team. They've said exactly the same as what you were saying, guys. It was just basically it's a bit of a free hit. Can't see them getting off the spoon, but I think one of them said, yeah, they'll win a game though.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, there are some names we recognise in there, but to be totally honest, there's a lot of names I don't recognise as well, which is not necessarily a bad thing. No. They have cast the net reasonably wide here to draw in both Kiwis and Australians who've shown some merit. We haven't just tried to roll out a kind of also-ran squad of existing W League players into this new A League women squad. You know, that's not what we've tried to do here. We've genuinely tried to build up a local young squad, and I think that's commendable. As Cam said, you know, whether or not it sees any results this season doesn't really matter. That's clearly a longer-term prospect, and I think that's got to be fantastic for the women's game. Good on them for going in that direction rather than trying to trot out, you know, the same kind of journeyman as you know, they could have.
Yeah.
They could easily have just done that and finished, you know, got a few results and not been drift at the bottom. But we all know that's not what they're trying to do with this team all along. They've been trying to build this team to build towards 2023, and it's this group of players that are longer term going to build the Football Ferns squads. It's good. It's good to see. And as long as the fans get behind it and realise that actually, you know, the results may not come our way to start with, but it is a longer term project than, you know, trying to finish mid table in your first season. Then, you know, we just buy in and go with it, basically.
Yeah, I think it's also worth pointing out that it's a longer term project than just the Knicks as well. It's obviously leading towards the 2023 World Cup. I think that's getting a bit of depth there. I think it's going to be vital. And it's good to see New Zealand football recognise that and realise that the Knicks A-League women's team is a really good opportunity to kind of see and get these players some good experience. So I think that this whole season is just it's a win-win for everyone involved. Should be good. And they get their first hit out on Friday night with against the Wanderers. That game is at 7 o'clock, I believe. 7 o'clock.
New Zealand time. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so. And then 9:45 for the next men's team against the Wanderers as well. Have any opinions on results on these games, boys?
No, not for the women's team. I think Wanderers will win, but I'm not prepared to put anything like a score on it because we've just not seen them play.
Oh no, no, I think that's probably fair. What about the men's team?
Actually, how have Wanderers been doing?
They've had three draws. Draw against with Sydney. And the second one was a draw, two-all draw with Jets. So it is very early at the moment, but Jets are, so Wanderers sitting currently eighth on 2 points. Jets ninth on one. Not that that means much. It's most everyone bar the Victory are sitting on, you know, four or below. So good chance for getting another 3 points under the belt. Feels like their Wanderers haven't been making the most of their opportunity. So
are they playing up the Hemed angle?
I haven't heard it pushed.
I'm sure someone is somewhere, surely.
Because I haven't said, I'm not, to be honest, haven't really had much touch on the socials this week just because of work. But I would have thought if you're going to, you know, promote the game, that's the kind of the angle you're going to go with, right?
Yeah, but you would have thought like they'd do that a bit more with Davila, but I didn't see a tremendous amount of that.
Yeah, that's true, and it is Paramount's first season, and they may not be fully aware of all those storylines that you could, you know, generate the marketing from. But this would have been the way to go, I think.
Yeah, I'd say that it's safe to say that Tim Payne will be getting a Mr. Hamid tier and just reminding him of opportunities missed.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, we saw Uli get kicked a couple times with some intent. I'm sure the same will occur this weekend. Yeah, I think it. I'm not sure if I'm misremembering the stat, but before the game last weekend, Piney dropped the stat. And, I mean, I'm sure he had his stat right, and I'm going to misremember the hell out of it. But I think he was saying that out of the first, I believe it was five games of a season, our most points ever is 6 points. Wow. I think we're going to beat that this weekend. We'll be three games in. I think we're on track for 3 points here. I don't think the Wanderers have looked that good. I think we've been creating chances. All we've got to do is score a few of them. So I'd be saying similar to what I said last week, where I think this is a 2-1 or 3-1 to us. I don't think we get away with a clean sheet. I think we're a bit too scratchy at the back still. But I think there'll be goals because we're creating good chances, and I don't think that's going to stop. So, yeah, I'm reasonably confident on what I've seen that I think we'll come away here with points, and hopefully it's three of them.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, actually, Dave. The only rider I'd put on that is I don't know if Hamid is one of these plays well against the former club kind of guys. And he strikes me as a kind of guy that might, and he's capable of going on a streak, we know that. But, yeah, all things point to me to another 3 points. I find that so weird as a start to the season. I'll take it every time, but interesting. And for viewing, I can heartily recommend going down to the Moustache Bar, where there will be a bit of a viewing party going on to watch both of those games. Please head along, especially if you want to catch up with some of the Fever lights. I don't know whether that's light as in L-I-T-E or L-I-G-H-T-S. You boys are all wonderful, but...
yeah, and just for those who don't know, Moustache is the new name of what was Danger Danger, obviously an old Fever haunt, and Maddie still owns the place and is setting up something upstairs in Mustache for the Fever to watch. So that'll be a good chance to check out a new spot around. Obviously, Maddie's been very good to the Fever over a number of years, so it'll be nice to be back in a familiar, if unfamiliar, spot.
Yeah, I can hardly recommend that. Maddie will look after us, no doubt.
Yeah,
as he always does. One final bit of news is Paul Gothard, the long-time goalkeeping coach for the Knicks men's team, has announced that he will be moving on to coach Northern Rovers at the end of the A-League season. Bit of a loss, Cam. You know him reasonably.
Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed by the news, to be honest, but I can understand his what he's saying. He's from up north. Well, his family lives up north. He's actually from the UK. But his family lives up north, and once you've had two seasons where you're basically based away from them for the length of time that they would have been by the end of this stint in Australia, I can understand wanting to go on to try something different. And, you know, he's at the moment he's got the goalkeeping role. He was an ex-goalkeeper as well, and he's doing the goalkeeping coaching role, and maybe he wants to have a shot at being a head coach. Now that the National League is open to club-based rather than franchise-based as it was previously, there's an opportunity to go quite a bit further with those clubs. So I can understand why you jump the chart. So I think it's going to be a massive loss for the club. He's a very, very good coach, very well-respected. He's done some incredible work, particularly with Ollie Sale, and he should be commended for that. You can also look at someone like Zach Jones, who's currently playing with Miramar Rangers, so good young peepers. He's obviously brought through Alex Paulson as well, who hopefully will go on to develop more things. So yeah, I think he'll be a bit of a loss.
Yeah, agree. He's a fantastic coach. We've been lucky at my club to have a bit of stuff with him as well over the years, working with some of our particularly younger goalkeepers, and he's just a phenomenal coach. Genuinely nice guy who loves what he does. It's sad to see him go from the Phoenix, but jumping on to a head coach role, and it from my skimming of the announcement earlier, I think it's a 3 or 4 year contract, and it's running both the men's program and the juniors program. So I'm sure that'll go really well. And it's a loss for the Phoenix, but great opportunity for him, and something with, you know, that kind of long term prospect of being back home without the travel and settle down and just do your thing. I think it'll do him some good.
Yeah, I do look forward to that first halftime talk where he's a little disappointed in the lads. He does have a bit of that white line fever at the best of times, and I will miss that. Certainly, the Aloisi brothers might not, but that's
more important. The banter from him is excellent as well. So I'm sure that'll bring something to local football too. So it's good.
Yeah,
I like it.
Knicks adjacent news, I think. They've just sprung to mind as well. Albert Riera has been announced as the coach of Auckland City, which is...
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, good on him. There's a lot of
things
going on around that as well, with Jose leaving. So which I think is a short-sighted decision by Auckland City in all fairness. But good on Albert, and I hope it goes well for him. I hope he turns out to be the best team in Auckland and the fourth or fifth best team in the country.
No, it'll be interesting to see how he goes. I genuinely didn't realise he had coaching aspirations. So to me, it felt kind of out of the blue. But yeah, hope he goes well. You know, it's a big opportunity with a big club that certainly won't be lacking in talent. So, you know, you've got some personalities and some egos to manage there, and I wish them the best with it. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. Let's wrap it up there, boys, and get off to our evenings. And we can – oh, Patrick will be happy with his editing because we've come in well under the hour, unless we keep talking.
Talk some shit for a while.
Yeah, we've talked 50 minutes with a shit, to be quite frank. So
yeah, that's fair.
So we'll leave it there. Thank you for listening. Go out, enjoy the game, head off to Mustache if you can, especially if you want to see the beaming faces of a couple of well-imbibed yellow feverites. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
good night.